Welcome to the Honesty Talks podcast. I am so glad you are joining the conversation today. I hope that you will dig deep with us, think honestly, and allow God to challenge us. As we explore, it is my hope that we grow and see more together. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Honesty Podcast. And right now we are actually going to be doing a series of everyday devotionals for counting the Omer in this season between Easter, Passover, Easter, Shavuot, and Pentecost. So there's this period of time that in the Jewish tradition they count what is called the Omer. And today, to help, actually for the next couple weeks, I have Jessica with me here, Jessica Larrabee, to help us walk through this every day for the next 3 weeks. So I'm going to hand it over to Jessica to say hi and actually explain what is an Omer.
Hi, yes. I would like to state that the Omer is 7 weeks, but we are starting in already at week 5, so we'll be doing the last 3 weeks of it. And the reason that we're okay with already starting halfway through is because an Omer is the amount that will fill you spiritually. So it is the perfect amount that will give you how much you need, and it will last for how long you need it. So no matter where you start, enter into it, you will still get what you need out of counting the Omer and sitting in what it means and reflecting with God on what the Omer will bring to you.
Awesome. And the historical reference to the Omer is, first it's used in Exodus to refer to the amount of manna taken every day. So that's kind of the spiritual filling that you're talking about.
Yes.
And historically, it was used to count down the days from Passover to when the people gathered around Mount Sinai in the Old Testament. And this throughout time, also when the temple was operational, built, they used this period of time from Passover until Shavuot, which is first fruits, to count grain offerings and what they would offer to God, their first fruits.
Yes, and the first use is in Exodus 16, and that is something we like to do a lot, is look at where's the first use in the Bible. So that is where we get the definition from, is related to counting the manna. And it also relates to, if you count the Omer, but then try to hoard it and control it for yourself, it becomes rotten and stinks, which is what happens if they tried to keep the manna for too long. So it is the balance of holding what God has given you, but not trying to control it.
Awesome. And there is a lot of historical references, too, of like counting the Omer is, in history, it was an agricultural society. And so offering first fruits of their harvest was a big deal because it was everything that they did. It was how they lived. They grew all of their own food, and they offered the first fruits of that to God. And the Omer, in where it first shows up in scripture, the word Omer, using to count, is in Exodus, but it's in the spiritual sense of counting the amount of manna God provided for the people. And so that's how that is like hooking together, that there's this, it is really the spiritual context in what we are counting in ourselves and leading up to being at the mountain of God with the people of God. And also, what are we offering during this time frame in first fruits? And then following the Mount Sinai in first fruits time is Pentecost. Mm-hmm. It's like a couple days after that and the coming of the Holy Spirit. And that all these things, like the timelines that don't happen all at once, they happen through time, are not happening on accident.
Correct. Yes. And when we look at Exodus 16, it says it is enough to fill your head and your soul. So it's really emphasizing on God's provision being enough for you physically, but also being enough for you spiritually, mentally, and just really how you inhabit the space with time and trusting that God's provision will continue to come.
And also with the historical context of offering grain, it's also the work of your hands is what's needed to be surrendered to God too.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just about taking, there's a relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that the historical and, well, they're both historical because manna happened way before offering of grain, but like throughout time, that there's a both.
And I think it teaches us how to hold the passing of time better. Like, we are just leaving Passover, which is about what are you leaving during this season? And then it teaches us how to be mindful with our time as we move forward and as we're leaving out of this space, and just the intentionality of being present with God so we don't go back into the narrow place that we just left.
Mm. And for those of you who are listening and might not know what Passover is about, to give you a little background, Passover is 7-8 days long, and it is a whole week. And we celebrate during this time the exodus of the people from Egypt. And Egypt in the Hebrew is Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim means narrow place. So there is a large spiritual truth to every year at Passover. We are looking at what are the narrow places that we have become slaves to. We work worshiping, serving other things other than God that we need to leave in life. And those can be spiritual realities, and they can also be physical realities. They can be jobs, relationships, things we believe about ourselves that we need to leave. So in this season where we've identified things to leave, counting the Omer is then a way to be more intentional and present with yourself and to not fall back into those patterns, mm-hmm. and really to make space for growth and what Omer. There is a structure and how we meditate on this and count it every day. And it involves prayers and a structure. So I'm going to let Jessica explain the structure of counting the Omer.
Yes, there are 7 different themes, and each week has its own theme, and each day has its own theme. And so you sit in what the weekly meaning is overall, as well as you sit in what the daily meaning is and how that plays a part into the weekly meaning.
So how it intersects. Awesome. And there's, when we're doing this, there's room for however, whatever God is speaking to you as you are counting, mm-hmm. and those weekly themes and daily themes, how they intersect. There'll be things that God points out to you that really stick with you. And really, it's a practice of hearing.
Mm-hmm. Hearing where God is leading you and what you need, because what Trin might need is different from what I need and what I'm going to get out of the counting.
So we want this to be a richness of space that's provided as we count the Omer, that there's room for individually we're going to encounter that differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just hope that you get a lot of richness out of these devotionals. We're going to share how we both interact with it, which is very different, and that there's room for how God may be moving in you in the counting of the Omer, mm-hmm. as well.
Good evening. It is the 46th day of the Omer. It is the evening of May 12th, and we are in the week of Malchut, which is sovereignty, dignity, mastery, completion, reflection, divine presence. The people are David, Rachel, and Esther, and the color is blue.
And we are actually in the day of Netzach, which is victory, eternity, effectiveness, endurance, ambition, and overcoming limitations. And the people are Moses and Miriam, and the color is light pink. These are 2 colors I would not put together.
No, not very much. Like, pink and blue kind of complement each other. Like, I'll wear a pink shirt with blue jeans.
Okay, that's true. But I'm thinking, like, darker blue, because it is a darker blue,
mm-hmm.
with pink. I don't know. For some reason, I just don't think of those colors together. I think of lighter blues together with pink.
That's fair. Yeah, they're not people's first choice, that's for sure. Usually there's like a purple in between. If you're going to have a dark blue, it's going to go like light pink, purple, dark blue.
So it's just an interesting color match. And I think the choices are interesting too, because it's like, what's the victory in sovereignty? What's the victory in dignity? What's the victory in mastery? You know, what's the eternity? They're like heavy hitting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like light pink is not a heavy hitter. Like victory, eternity, effectiveness, endurance, ambition, overcoming limitations.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just having the word eternity in it is going to make it heavy. But I feel like overcoming limitations can be a positive thing, which would be like a light pink.
Yeah, I just don't think of light pink as a weighty thing. Not necessarily negative. I'm not saying negative or positive. I just don't think of like light pink as weighty.
Research has shown that if you wear the color pink, people are more likely to want to hug you.
Really? I did not know that.
Random fact.
Huh. There must be something to do with the color and what it does in your brain.
Yeah, it's a feel-good color for a lot of people, or like a comfort.
So victory should be comforting, and eternity should be comforting, and effectiveness should be comforting, and endurance should be comforting, and ambition should be comforting, and overcoming limitations should be comforting.
Knowing that the divine presence is in each of those is comforting.
Oh, touche, touche.
Having eternity with the divine presence sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're right. It sounds like one eternal hug.
Mm-hmm. And the effectiveness of completion and mastery through the divine presence.
She's on fire today, folks.
I just like these. The overcoming limitations can go with completion of, if you can't become complete until you overcome the limitations you put in your place.
Yeah, because you're literally looking at the overcoming limitations in mastery or in completion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's literally begging the question, what limitations are you overcoming in order to walk toward completion or mastery? Mm-hmm. Here's a good one. What limitations are you overcoming to reflect?
Because
that seems to be, reflection has been something I think we've really, I mean, we've been sitting in all of these, but it keeps coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think of it the other way of, what limitations have you put in the way for yourself to stop you from reflecting, to stop you from reaching mastery? I think of it as a personal thing. What have I done that I'm limiting myself from reaching completion then?
That's true. I think that's something we could all get better at, like seeing. Like the ways that we stand in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
Both spiritually, physically, relationally, in relationship with God.
Yeah, and that we have to overcome the limitations that we put in ourselves in order to have a relationship with the divine presence.
What about the limitations put on us by other people?
Yeah. I feel like when people only expect so much of you, you're gonna continue to sell yourself short because you've been told your whole life, oh, you can't or something.
And that's when I come back to, you know, I'm on this dignity kick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What is the dignity in overcoming limitations? And I think of it as like, where is the dignity to be found in overcoming limitations? Rather, you put them on yourself, or rather the world does or people do. That there's maybe a restorative dignity work in creation, in yourself, in the world, in your relationship with God.
Yeah. I even like the sovereignty with the overcoming limitations. The supreme power and authority of overcoming limitations.
That you can only do it, I think, with the supreme power and authority.
And once you overcome those limitations, you give yourself the ability to connect with the supreme power in you and to give yourself authority.
Well, I would say that's connecting it to the image of God. We're all created in, right, the image of Elohim. So if we're all created in the image of Elohim, in the image of, like, God in the fullness, not just one part, that we're connecting to the divineness within us, which gives us authority, because God gives us authority. Because of who we are, because of who we were created to be, and also because of what Yeshua brings as well.
Yeah,
like we have the inheritance too. I mean, you could say that too from a Christian perspective, that Yeshua brings the inheritance, but we were always created in the image of Elohim. And so there is this, like, it's not our own power, it's, I think, we're much more intertwined with the divine.
I agree, and each limitation that we overcome is a step closer to being connected to the divine presence.
And one step closer to shalom.
Mm-hmm.
Like wholeness.
Completion.
Oh! Slam dunk. She's on fire.
And the endurance that it takes to get there. Reaching shalom is not easy.
And it takes some ambition.
Mm-hmm.
Like some endurance and ambition.
And it's gonna feel like an eternity.
Cause it is, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like any time that we are gonna take the temptation of the fruit of I have arrived, there's other ways you have not. So I just feel like that's a fruit that I think a lot of people like, I call temptation fruit.
Mm.
Of the fruit of I have arrived and therefore I don't need to do any more work on myself or in my relationships or my spiritual life. We're never going to arrive fully until, I don't know. That's actually an open-ended question for me. Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like God is in restorative work and I can't put limitations on when I think that restoration is going to be complete because only God can do that.
I agree. And I think it's important to sit in the victory of when you have those little moments of you can tell a part of you has been brought to shalom, where that part of you then God has met it there and that part is healed into the wholeness of how God had created it to be. And I think it's important to feel the victory of that, but to know that that does not mean it's the whole of you.
Mm. Yes. That you're not wholly shalom, like,
mm-hmm.
yet. And also the fact that victory belongs to Yah.
Mm.
So how we hold victory matters.
Yeah.
Because it belongs to Yah, who is sovereign.
Mm.
And also knows how to wield that and when.
Mm. I'm even looking at the people. Like, for men, at least, we have David and Moses. The two, like, most known, powerful people in the Bible, other than maybe Adam. So, of course, this feels heavy.
Elijah.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's the thing. There's so many powerful figures.
First five books.
Joshua.
Hmm. Okay, never mind then.
Noah.
Ignore my thought.
No, I'm just poking fun. Because you're right, though. They are two of the most popular stories. If you think about it, when you think about, like, messianic figures,
mm-hmm.
the first two that are going to pop in your head are Moses and David. So you had an absolute point. Because the other guys, yes, they did things. Mm-hmm. But these two actually did, like, say, like, I think, it's not that the other ones didn't do, like, salvational acts. But these ones really did. Like, David brought, like, liberated Israel through military,
mm-hmm.
and brought the people together. He was the second king. Moses liberated all of the people,
mm-hmm.
from slavery and formed, like, what is Israel. So, like, these are both foundational people in the life of a nation. So I think you're right on that point.
And they both have relatively, like, long stories in the Bible. Noah's got chapter and a half.
That's true. See? That's true.
So I think of the weightiness that way even of course, the Netzach of the Malchut feels heavy because you have Moses and David who are a large chunk of the Torah and have these weighty stories of both victory and eternity with the divine presence with them.
And overcoming limitations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, David was a shepherd. They didn't even call him with the other brothers when Samuel, the prophet, came to anoint the new king and asked to that Jesse brought mm-hmm. all of his sons. He was left in the field because they were like, it isn't going to be him.
And how hard that must be for him to then step into the sovereignty with it of the supreme power and authority when your whole life, everyone's, it's not you. Oh, go home. You shouldn't be here. oh, now we're trying to kill you.
Right. And, I mean, we see that in the story of David and Goliath when he hadn't even taken power. He was anointed king. He hadn't even taken power.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still serving the king. And his brothers were like, you're just here to watch the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the unseen, like, I think the story arc of David overcoming limitations, like, rather they are self-imposed or other people, is just enormous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this kid goes out and fights a guy that's ridiculously huge with what? 5 stones and a shepherd's hook?
Yep. A slingshot.
And 1 stone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that sets the trajectory. Like, again, with God and the story. You know what I'm saying? God is the one who writes the story, and it is going to come from a place where we don't really think it's going to come from. So I think we need to, like, when we want to cast judgment, I think, on other people or organizations or whatever, and we're casting, like, there needs to be a pause there of, like, what might God be doing that I don't see, but I'm judging based on how I think it's going to come about or should come about or what I think is right.
I'm judging based on how I've experienced God in my life, which doesn't leave room for other people to experience God the way that they experience God.
Yes. And I think that's part of what's missing in the Big C church is room. Like, I think in good natured, well-meaning to try to put words to how God works in the lives of people.
Mm-hmm.
It went from, this is how God works in my life, to this is how God works in all lives.
Mm.
And that doesn't leave room for exactly what you said. We're all very unique and different. I mean, the Enneagram shows us that. I mean, all of the personality tests out there show us that we are all different.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're made intentionally unique and different. And God did that on purpose. Like, God wanted diversity. It wasn't an accidental byproduct.
Yeah.
So, but there's something about that of, like, leaving space for the fact that, I think that's why I love storytelling so much, is that holding other people's stories and telling your own story leaves room for everybody to have a story of how God works in their lives, and it leaves it to be different.
Mm.
And it's not a secular idea to go, well, it's just everyone's truth. No, that's not what that is. It is bringing honor to the fact that God has created very diverse peoples, and God speaks to those peoples differently. And we even see this in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
that God speaks to people a little differently and works with them differently. And where do we leave space for that?
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because we leave space for people to interact with God differently doesn't mean we leave space for, we don't have any structure or any morals. Like, that's not how that works.
And not only that, but where in our lives are we limiting ourselves to experience God? If we're expecting God to show up the same way that God has in the past for our lives, we might miss out when God shows up in a different place because we're still looking in the same place.
Yeah, and how many times in scripture does God do very paradoxical things, very opposite things?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one time he'll work this way, God will work this way, and the other time God will do something completely different,
mm-hmm.
on the opposite end of the spectrum. And it's like, because we love formulas. Like, to put things in formulas.
We like the comfort and control that it gives us when we understand it. And even to go with, God reaches for each people in different ways. Look at Moses. Mixed multitudes left. There was Egyptians in that. There was other non-Israelite slaves, which they weren't Israelites yet. They all became Israelites once they left, regardless of whether they were from the line of Joseph or not.
Exactly. And it goes toward the story that God's always been writing, is that all can be grafted in.
Mm.
You know, we talk about the tree and we've been grafted into the vine, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the Gentiles are finding a way to the Lord through the chosen people of Israel, although Big C Church has kind of put themselves in the place in the center of the story when really they're not the center of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Which has also paved the way for a lot of other atrocities when you put yourself at the center of a story that you're not.
Yes.
There's a thing, especially in this time, where we could experience and bring dignity back to people, if we really embraced, like if Christianity really embraced their otherness, that the story of the Bible tells that it's God's people is Israel. And yes, it's mixed multitudes, but that they're being grafted in through Israel's Messiah. And Jesus is an extension of that because Jesus was a Jewish rabbi.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just where my brain took me.
I like it.
With all these heavy things that are very good and eternal.
We can't sit in this without it getting heavy just because of what's there is already heavy.
That's true.
We wouldn't be fully doing our job to ourselves and even to everyone who's listening by trying to make this fluffy bunnies and rainbows.
Fluffy bunnies and rainbows, everybody.
Victory in eternity. It's fine. No big deal.
It is heavy. And I think we need to hold it as such and look at it as such. Oh, man. This was a good one.
Yeah. And I think even the importance to know that, yes, you need to hold the heavy day, but that not every day will be heavy.
We're going to leave you with that. Because I like that. Yes, you need to hold the heavy day, but not every day will be heavy. Blessings. I hope today's conversation has been deep and transformative. Please consider becoming a Patreon supporter to help us continue and expand the Honesty Talks podcast. When you are a Patreon supporter, you will get to be a part of our online community. You can also get other great things like early access to episodes, participating in polls, and making suggestions on future podcast topics, and so much more. For more information and to donate, go to patreon.com/honesty_talks. Thank you for listening and join us next time.